5 seconds. We have complete clearance for launch. We are go. 1, 2, 9.
Guidance internal. Ignition sequence start.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Howdy, neighbors. May the Lord bless you.
I figured out a long time ago that it's much easier to control people when we're all watching the same TV shows, listening to the same radio stations, going to the same movies, looking at the same billboards, eating the same food, and speaking the same language.
Stop the party!
I'm talking about my life. I can't seem to get that through to you. I'm not just talking about one person, I'm talking about everybody. I'm talking about form, I'm talking about content, I'm talking about interrelationships, I'm talking about God, the devil, hell, heaven. Do you understand? Finally!
All will obey Santa in this new world order! Oh yeah!
You're gonna have to answer to the Coca-Cola company.
That sounds like a lot of...
There is only one holistic system of systems. One vast and immense multinational dominion of governance. Multinational dominion
which will produce and control hallucinations to the point that it will change human reality.
PSYOP Radio.
Decoding the psychological warfare machinations within paranormal and parapolitical landscapes. PSYOP Radio.
Welcome aboard, everybody. Whoa, man. Yes, I still love that new intro. And
hey, yeah.
I was thinking we should have a contest where folks try to identify all the different clips. We
should, yes.
I don't know exactly how many are in there. I'll probably tell you next time as a hint. But let's just say there's going to be some kind of special giveaway if you can come up with a comprehensive list of all the sample.
You come up with a list, we'll come up with a prize for you. Okay.
Thank you for joining us here on PSYOP Radio Live from Austin, Texas. Whoa, what day is it? It's June 28th. It's almost over. It's just the beginning of summer, and it's been another hot one, temperature-wise, news-wise.
We have had a lot of news, and before I came over here, I turned on NBC News. The evening newscast led off again. I think it's been almost a week since Michael Jackson did, and that's still the lead story. They dealt with that for 8 minutes and then spent 3 minutes of the first opening segment of the NBC Evening News on the death of a TV pitchman, someone named Billy Mays.
Ah, yes. You mentioned you sent me a link for that.
And then they had just time for about a minute to devote to Iran. So we won't be talking a lot about Michael Jackson tonight because the mainstream media has got that pretty well covered.
Yeah.
But I will say it was pretty weird to have two major pop icons die in the same day. And, of course, the day before, 2 days before, Ed McMahon and died. And, you know, that's...
On the tales of David Carradine.
Yes, and David Carradine. And there's been this observation many times in the past. For years, I've heard it, that the celebrity high-profile deaths tend to come in clusters like that. So that's kind of weird. It's like some kind of a copycat effect of celebrities dying.
In fact, there's a new post up at copycateffect.blogspot.com where Lauren Coleman, in discussing Twilight Language and copycat effects, is musing that is Cronkite going to die on the 4th?
Hmm.
Because often people die, seemingly, on dates that are significant to them. And a number of mysterious people. That's no Death Watch. We're not trying to push that on.
No, we certainly wouldn't want to do that.
But, man, we've got Bilderberg news. We've got Federal Reserve news. We've got Aquapocalypto news, police state drinking game.
And the yogurt shop murders coming up
on PSYOP Radio.
Oh, delay, oh, delay, oh, delay, oh, delay.
We're back. Welcome to PsyOp Radio, folks. Thanks for tuning in. I'm going to lead off tonight with some Central Texas news. This one's out of Austin360.com, American Statesman staff writing. It's on movies. Or is it? Is it movies or is it politics? Ex-FBI official lashes out at Waco script, but movie makers defend accuracy. This is by Chris Garcia, as I said, Austin American Statesman staff. When Bob Hudgens, director of Texas Film Commission, recently said that he had personally rejected a screenplay called Waco, a thriller about the siege of the Branch Davidian compound near Waco in 1993, for the state's new tax incentives, he said there were gross inaccuracies in the script that at best muddled the fact, and at worst, rewrote the historical record. Now, we talked about this before.
Yeah.
Apparently, if this happens, if this actually continues down this road, it will be the second state in the union that has basically a political censorship clause in effect.
What's the other one?
Utah.
Utah has
one. Mormon country.
Mm-hmm. They don't want movies being made that might criticize Mormonism,
perhaps,
in Utah, and who knows what else. Well, here, they don't want movies made that might criticize the government's handling of the Branch Davidian affair. And this is the FBI agent Byron Sage, whose name figures prominently in the Waco affair.
And he comes out straight and says, I'm here to do the FBI's work as far as, you know, making the historical record correct, which means, of course, the FBI's version.
Basically, the FBI's version. That's the one that he's not happy with. He says here that he didn't want some kind of Oliver Stone version of events. We know what is meant by that with regard to JFK, the Oliver Stone version of events as opposed to the FBI version. You know, you start looking at it at Waco and
how about
you
the
see
Senate
that,
Assassination Committee version.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was at a moment there early in the siege that at first I wasn't paying that much close attention to it, but I was hearing all these FBI comments about Koresh in the press conferences, and, you know, at first was taking them at face value, and then suddenly I realized, wait a minute, these are the same guys that told me back in the 60s that Oswald was guilty. clearly the FBI isn't happy with the script of this movie about Waco, and
now the examples they cite, the guy is nitpicking over his rightful anger over the fact that they're fictionalizing it, meaning they're taking multiple characters, they're writing a script,
which you have to do.
They're not taking from transcripts.
You have
it's
to
not a documentary.
Do
it's a
that.
Fictional film.
Yeah, and that's really all he's so really nitpicking about.
So the article makes it seem like he's nitpicking over little things, but that it is in fact trying to go.
And yet it says here he
record.
Admits that the character based on him is a composite of many FBI negotiators, and it goes on and it says here, when it comes to stories based on history, Hollywood is known to distill and compress, elide and edit, even put its own spin on the facts. Broad strokes are used, actual events scrunched into a film's two-hour running time.
My God.
Composite characters are a common device, and chronology might be shuffled for dramatic effect. You know, but
he
it goes
he
on.
Does, he does not want his name associated with it in any way, shape, or form, unquote.
But it does go on to say here, other examples of inaccuracies, according to Sage, include placing prominent agents at the siege for the full 51 days. Again, that's nitpicking.
Yeah.
Because they're, you know, they're trying
people
to
came and went,
tell a comprehensible movie when they were there for 1 or 2 days. Okay, big deal. And showing agents firing flashbangs into the compound,
Kaboom.
Suggesting that the FBI started the deadly fire. Well, how about this? The FBI did start the fire. And he goes on here. This is quoting Sage. If people want to know what truly happened at Waco, they can talk to some old white-haired guy like myself and read the congressional record and review the Danforth investigation and all the court accounts. Well, we could also just, you know, read the Warren Commission report and just let it go at that. How about talking to the surviving Branch Davidians, which we did, myself and my friends, who made the documentary Day 51, The True Story of Waco. If you want to know what truly happened at Waco, don't listen to this old white-haired FBI guy, Byron Sage. Listen to us. See our documentary. We talk to the people who were there inside the compound. Okay,
the church,
who were a church actually, who were attacked and many of them slaughtered by agents of the federal government.
Yeah, so, I recently digitized the film Day 51 that you appear in.
Yes,
and I'm hoping that we can have a show soon with an interview with the director, and I'm hoping to launch those videos online sometime so that folks can see this other lesser known but equally important Waco documentary.
Yes. We'll get into Waco in more detail about the time that we put those online. Have a good discussion about that here.
Well, there's been some very new news, some very interesting developments in the Austin Yogurt Shop murder.
Oh, yes.
Let's see. I've got that right here.
Now, developing news from KXAN, Austin News.
It's wonderful, and I'd like to thank God.
The Yogurt Shop case reopened and its suspects released. Now, after almost 10 years behind bars, the two defendants must battle once again to prove their innocence.
State District Judge Mike Lynch has just ruled on a continuance, allowing Robert Springsteen and Michael Scott to walk free.
Those two are accused in the 1991 murders of four teenage girls at the I Can't Believe It's Yogurt Shop in North Austin. Tonight, we have in-depth team coverage for you, including background on what led up to today's release, reaction from the victims and the defendants' families, and also what comes next. Now, we will begin with Shannon Powell, who was in the courtroom early this morning when the judge made this controversial decision. Shannon?
Well, Leslie, I will tell you that today's decision was not one that many people anticipated would happen, but a move by the prosecution set the stage, and now two men who have spent the last 10 years in jail, charged with capital murder, are now free. When Michael Scott walked into the courtroom on Wednesday morning, no one knew for sure what would happen to him or Robert Springsteen, also charged in the Yogurt Shop killings.
There's no question that we would prefer trial. I want them acquitted, and I want them free for the rest of their lives.
Both men will have to wait for a trial and settle for temporary freedom.
Obviously, we are pleased. And I think the judge was very fair in his ruling.
The ruling that prompted this came after another hearing earlier this week when the prosecution asked for a delay in Michael Scott's July trial. The DA's office wanted time to investigate evidence to find out whose DNA was in two victims, DNA that did not belong to Scott or Springsteen.
Currently, it is clear to me that our evidence in the death of these four young women includes DNA from one male whose identity is not yet known to us.
The DA says she still feels the two men committed the crime, but while her office looks for more answers, Scott's wife wants this all to come to an end.
The relief doesn't start until they're not ever going to have to step foot in this courtroom ever again.
But for now, she will accept taking her husband home. He is free, and so is Robert Springsteen. Now, the two men have their next court hearing in 6 weeks. During that time, they are supposed to check in regularly with the court. They also have been instructed to have no alcohol, no guns, no weapons, no contact with the witnesses or the victim's families, and they are to stay in Travis County. Reporting live at the Justice
So this is a live coverage from a couple days ago, Austin News, KXAN.
Yes, they've been freed, the two suspects. And it is interesting that this was this is unprecedented. That's the word that was used to describe it in the Austin American Statesman story this morning, that releasing these two guys under a capital murder charge, to release them without bail and on the personal recognizance is unprecedented. And, you know, it looks very encouraging. But, you know, this is a very strange case. It's something I know a little bit about because back in 2000, it's been almost 10 years, hard to believe, I interviewed Eric Mobius about this case. Now, Eric Mobius is a lawyer or was, he was disbarred as a result of his digging into this case. But he's a former assistant attorney general of the state of Texas. He's got good credentials. Well, he came up with a theory about the yogurt shop case that emerged from his investigations into something he discovered called insurance reserve fraud schemes. Involves money laundering and all kinds of bad things, including murder. And there are a number of cases, not just the yogurt shop, where there are strong indicators where either an accident at a construction site or a killing at an isolated convenience store late at night, where these places were overinsured and some funny things happened both before these incidents and afterwards, and in particular with the insurance money that was paid out. Because the way this works is, according to Eric Mobius, that that in Texas, due to the way the laws are and how they are so often in the insurance company's favor, and well, what they'll do is when they have all this money, you see, that is in reserve throughout the year, and it's there in reserve for the possibility of having to pay something out for a catastrophic claim.
Catastrophic death.
Yes. Well, at the end of the year, very often there's plenty of money left over, and well, what can they do with that money? Well, they can, be upfront about it and rebate it to, you know, the policyholders and so forth. But what they do, in some cases, this criminal scheme, the way it is, it works, is they can take that money and they can play with it, you know, money, you know, launder it and do things with it. So when a catastrophic claim is, paid out, what can happen is that the individual that it was paid out to will be separated from the claim. And the classic case was like this. There was a woman whose son was severely brain injured on a construction site at Breckenridge Hospital. There was an affidavit, a sworn affidavit from a Breckenridge employee who describes that she did something that is completely unethical, wrong to do. She recommended a lawyer to this woman. She had been paid to do that. She felt bad about it because what happened was this lawyer represented her and he got the claim all right, but he came back to her and told her that there was no claim, that the case went nowhere. This was a woman who could barely speak English. She was a Hispanic woman. Well, and what they do is they take that money, and the laws are set up in such a way that it protects them from any scrutiny. She's been separated from her claim. They've got the money, and they can then launder it with drug money or do anything and turn, you know, several million into several billion. Well, because these cases were very often happening in such a way that the victims were Hispanic, Eric Mobius, as an attorney for LULAC, this advocacy group for Latin Americans, discovered this. Well, anyway, he came to the conclusion finally that the yogurt shop murders were a result
of
insurance fraud scheme, and he believed that persons in influential and high places were involved because the money is so huge, you see, and that there was a cover-up there at the crime scene. And his belief, and it's based on what he interprets in the autopsy reports, is that one of the girls was killed by a policeman who entered the yogurt shop, after the crimes had been discovered, after the fire and so forth, but undercover of being a cop, he could go in there and he could finish the one girl off who was not killed. They all had been shot in the head by a .22 caliber gun, but one had an additional .38 caliber wound in her head, And his belief is that a cop only could have gotten in there at that time and delivered that last shot to make sure she didn't survive. Well, it's a very sinister case. And certainly the behavior of the police, the investigation, lends credence to the fact that something might be covered up. And we go back to the early 90s, when right away there began to be reports of attempts by the police to coerce, to beat confessions out of potential suspects. One homicide investigator, Hector Polanco, was demoted as a result of that. It must have been pretty bad, whatever he did. He was the same cop involved in the coerced confessions of these two guys that went to prison for the Pizza Hut murders. Remember those? Two guys, and it was proved through, DNA exonerated them, basically, and it all came out how one of them was coerced by this Austin homicide investigator, Hector Polanco, coerced and into confessing to the murder. And, that implicated his friend as well, and they both went down. And they would still be there today had the DNA evidence not become available later. Well, it's the same cop, but he was caught doing the same thing in the yogurt shop case. You go on. The Austin American Statesman this morning ran, a sidebar with a big article there about how witnesses, they saw these four kids, these young guys with a gun at one time or another, and that's really all they have, Well, the interesting thing to know is, these witnesses, how did they treat the witnesses? Well, you can go to my website with my article there, and there's an affidavit by a witness who describes how he was coerced into implicating his friend Robert Springsteen. I talked to a young man named Patrick who told me how he was coerced into implicating Michael Scott. He told me how that all came about. And he tried to take it back. He realized that what he had said was going to be used to convict his friend. And when he tried to take it back, they threw the book at him for perjury, and he went to prison for 2 years here in the state of Texas. And
for ratting on coercion.
And then there was the attempt to pin it on Kenneth McDuff, who abducted a woman just a few nights after the yogurt shop murders. And there was an attempt to pin it on some Mexican immigrants. I tell you, it goes on and on, but we'll get back to it right after this break.
Yeah, they tried to pin it on some Mexicans. We'll be right back.
They say he shot the president, but I
Thank you, Danny, for some of the new bumper music. All right. We were just discussing the
coercion of witnesses.
Darker side of Austin's
yes.
criminal
and
underbelly.
Yes. What passes for justice here in Austin, Texas, is not a pretty sight. And it can't be summed up any better than a photograph taken, surveillance video footage from the interrogation room at the very interrogation where Michael Scott confessed to the yogurt shop murders, and there's the photo with the homicide detective Merrill holding a gun to his head. Yet, despite this flimsy evidence, a coerced confession and coerced witness testimony, well, they got their convictions.
Now,
Springsteen and Scott were convicted and sent to prison.
I was just going to interject with the devil's advocate here. The person, the police officer pictured in this surveillance video that you can see at your article on the Workshop Murders over at MacWhite.com that we linked to off PsyOpRadio.com. He claims that he wasn't holding a gun, but he says he was holding his hand in the shape of a gun.
Well,
this fellow's testimony is that it was a gun.
That's what's in the trial testimony. And what Merrill said there was that it was a role-playing game, that he just held the gun in the proximity of Scott's head. And then he conceded under testimony that that could be construed as coercion by a reasonable person.
So the guy, the
he's holding a gun to his head.
Okay, all right, there you go.
And they make mention of that in the documents relating to the appeal that has now resulted in these two men being freed, we hope, for a longer time. But that's been the history of this investigation.
And there was we also mentioned that Mexican police had coerced confessions out of a group of Mexicans
through torture
for the
and for some reason the Austin investigative team went down there to Mexico. There were big headlines about it at the time. This would have been early 90s, 92, maybe 93. And they were going to, I don't know what they were going to do, but I seem to recall that the Mexican government wasn't too keen on the idea of sending them back to the U.S. Because of the death penalty. So they were going to try them down there. At any rate, the cops just walked away from it. They just came back. Someone told me with a connection inside the police department that it was because they knew that these were never going to hold up because they had been gotten these confessions from torture. They had the way they use the way they do that down there to get a confession is very simple. They don't have to, you know, waterboard them the way we do. They waterboard them just with a soda pop bottle filled with water and cayenne pepper. And you do that to someone, you don't need a big apparatus, you know, and that's how they get their confessions in Mexico. Well, it's not too different on this side of the border, though, really, as it turns out. This is a troubling case that you got to wonder now, where's it going to go? I mean, now that, you know, these guys, it looks like they could really get released. Are we going to see the actual perpetrators? I don't know, but you know, I wrote this article, and I fully realize that it's a theory. That's how Mobius presents it. It's a theory, but you know, it's worth looking at because so far all the other theories we've heard from the police, especially all different versions that we've heard. From the idea that it might be these Mexicans or these guys, those have just not held up, and this seems a lot more plausible.
And again, no DNA evidence links the two suspects who have been serving time for 10 years.
The DNA shows that somebody else was there. We don't know who. You know, Mobius makes a lot of allegations. I don't know what to think of them, you know, that he even says that it was his belief that a snuff film might have been made. I don't know.
Is there known to be, was there video surveillance of the place?
No, there was not, to my knowledge, and I'm not sure how that would have, you know, played out. But he believes that sadism, you know, sexual sadism by persons in powerful places, powerful positions, was a factor in this crime.
Now, and this is the kind of insurance fraud that plays out apparently at various levels, from as you were describing cases of shootings or killings. In convenience store robberies, on up to, I mean, everybody's heard of, like, you know, car insurance fraud where they'll fake an accident, somebody will get pinned in, knowingly as a part of the scam or unknowingly, and then sometimes they die. And there's a scam involved there where it's an engineered accident. And there's been stories, I think, linking some famous Vietnam-era politicians like McNamara with large-scale operations where, you know, there's these strip mines and whatnot, and you've got all these workers, and you've got all these potential accidents and all these things that need to be insured, like, you know, oh, those big trucks they drive in and out of the pit mines.
Yeah.
And, occasionally they have accidents. We all know that.
In my article here, if you scroll down, it mentions up there, scroll up just a little higher. Right there. Okay. In time, Mobius came to believe that reserve fraud, or the site-specific death scheme, that's another term he has for it, is a very widespread practice with international implications. He writes, FM Properties, an entity represented by Lawyer M, the pseudonym he uses for this individual he believes is behind or linked to a number of these cases, including the yogurt shop.
Locally.
Lawyer M of Austin has experienced, FM Properties, an entity represented by Lawyer M of Austin, has experienced the murders of 26 of its employees in Indonesia, with all murders taking place on FM sites or being conducted in trucks or shipping containers owned by FM Properties. Even these murders can be insured here in Texas, allowing money to be downloaded through death claims that take place half a world away. So you see, this has implications beyond Central Texas.
So the kind of people that would engage in this kind of scam, they're going to go for it beyond just their local environment, potentially.
This is big international money, and the kinds of individuals who would perpetrate this sort of thing, of course, you know, are they get kicks from it as well. That's his allegation.
There was so much strangeness surrounding this case, and this is certainly just adds a whole new layer to it. I remember when I first became aware of this angle on the case, upon talking to you about it, it really blew my mind, and the more I dug into it, the more the idea of this kind of crime seemed to be pretty widespread. And in fact, post 9/11, I've come to find there's a number of different avenues of research for this, and some are as simple as scroogling, using your favorite search engine, the phrase dead peasant insurance. And this is basically your employer's ability, from everything from Walmart, you know, insuring those elderly people that they use to greet you at the front of the store, to your state employment agencies. The state of Texas considered having dead peasant insurance as part of its insurance policy on retirees. And there's, you know, they can give you a kind of weird logic about why this might be a good idea, but it comes down to they're betting on you dying. You've got somebody betting on you dying, I think you got something bad there.
You should be nervous. That should worry you.
Now,
yes.
I remember Michael Badnarik, former presidential candidate, the Libertarian Party, from here in Austin. Yeah, so he had a radio show here in Austin on another network a long time ago. And for a while, every week, he was having on these folks who were talking about a similar idea, that's the idea of dealing internationally and nationally with massive amounts of virtual money, virtual debt, and insurance claims that were perhaps connected to the events of 9/11. That's a whole other thing to get into, but again, that's just ratcheting up the scale of what we're talking about here. Can you imagine somebody making money off of insurance claims associated with 9/11? We've already heard about it through, you know, the airlines and whatnot, but getting
multiple
back to
agendas. You see, there being a, you know, a monetary motive in addition to the motive of, you know, social police state control. Terrorism.
I'm drinking fat tire tonight, by the way.
you know, false flag terrorism. And, you know, you have to wonder, well, might that have been another possible motive with the yogurt shop? Because think of the fear that creates in a community. And that sends serious shockwaves through Austin. Made national news. There was a 48 hours program on the yogurt shop murders and investigation. So you have to wonder, that's a form of terrorism, you know, whether or not it was perpetrated for that reason, but I don't know.
That's the idea of the strategy of tension.
Yes,
false flag operations, the instigating of crimes of a certain level or another on a scale that will terrorize the population and make them more willing to accept some kind of interloper, particularly a militarized one, to say, okay, we're going to put a stop to this. You're being, you know, mugged on every street corner. You must need better, stronger cops to protect
you. Or gun control. More and more and more laws, because people perceive themselves as living in this a climate of ever-increasing crime, and terrible things could happen to them and their kids. And so you can see how something like this might be staged for that purpose, and possibly in communities all across the nation. And when you look at some of the things we've discussed with our friend Adam Gorightly about the Manson murders and the possible connections of not only Manson family, but Son of Sam, and so many of these serial killers to cults.
Violent crime as a psychic theater for the masses to play upon their subconscious fears, and you know, there's very strange things associated with the yogurt shop thing. I've got acquaintances who had friends, and so it's a friend of a friend, a folk tale, a folkloric term for a friend of a friend story, but anecdotal evidence of a friend whose friend was interviewed by the police with the use of a hypnotist, because there might be some little bit of knowledge that they had to support a possible suspect. But it was like so outrageous when I heard about this.
Yeah.
I was like, this person, like, they were at a mall that day and heard somebody mention what they thought might have been a murder, and it was just, it was so like reaching. I was like, wow, that's really going way out of your way for something that,
and you would think,
using
with,
an extravagant tool that would more likely create false evidence rather than validate real evidence. But there's another strange incident of a very personal nature for me surrounding the yogurt shop murders, and that was two friends of mine with the same name who were friends approaching me about one of them having a contact with the local police, who claimed, and he came over to my house and made a big to-do, and like he was literally paranoidly staring into the vents looking for recording devices. And made us, you know, vow secrecy, and he basically said that he had contacts saying that there were satanic overtones to the yogurt shop murders, and that there were things written in blood on the walls. Just classic, like, you know, helter skelter kind of things. Now, we'll come back to that briefly.
Okay.
On the other side of this commercial for the last segment of this hour of PsyOp Radio via American Freedom Radio, and in the last half hour of the show, folks, we'll be taking phone calls. Probably, maybe I'll give you the number later. Stay tuned. Tuning in to PsyOp Radio. So we were just talking about the I was talking about the more weird personal side of my connection. Well, that's not even a connection. I hate to say something stupid like that, but basically I had a friend come over all freaked out with another friend of his who was all freaked out because he had heard some creepy stuff about Satanism connections to the yogurt shop murders, and he was looking in the vents and yada yada yada, swore me to secrecy. And I'm sorry, folks. I broke his promise. broken secret. I immediately, after this person left, this person was brought over to me by his friend and my friend who had the same name as him. So there's a strangeness there. I won't say their names.
Hmm.
But, their names actually have 14 significance, but I'll just say that. So I immediately after they left went down and told my roommate about what this guy told me and, you know, whatever. And, gosh, I guess I shouldn't have broken that.
That was a big secret to
because
keep.
Guess what? The next morning I'm sitting in front of the TV watching the local news and eating my breakfast cereal when I hear that my friend, the one who brought the friend over, had been shot that night.
Yikes.
Rather, that morning at a stop-and-go he worked at in South Austin. Mm. And it's a weird
shot and killed?
No.
He survived.
He survived, and it's very strange the way he survived. But basically, this friend had become my confidant and my paranormal investigations partner. We were, you know, reading Robert Anton Wilson together and talking about, you know, doing paranormal investigations and parapolitical investigations and reveling in Philip K. Dick material. And this friend was shot at his job at the Stop and Go by a guy wearing a tie-dye T-shirt. That should never happen. Never go into place. But it was the night after a friend by the same name he had brought over to my house to tell me this strange stuff about.
Mm-hmm.
The location of this, though, as soon as I heard your description years ago of these kinds of site-specific insurance fraud cases made me think of this location, because the couple times I've been to this particular convenience store that he was shot at, it struck me as fitting the description of like an out-of-place location where they had like introduced, you know, check cashing and with no video cameras and you know, plastered, you know, cigarette ads all over the window. So it was a perfect situation for somebody to rob a place.
Well, in an article that Eric Mobius wrote, if you go to my article on my website, and actually you can just go to the psyopradio.com site, and it's up at the top there, that list of links under Austex Syntex News. And there's my article, The Yogurt Shop Murders. Just go to that, and you'll come to the links page with that article. And there's two articles by Eric Mobius. And in one of them, he describes a murder robbery at a convenience store. And I forget what town this took place in. It actually took place outside the town. It was in an isolated location. But you can read about it there. In this article that he wrote, how they set this thing up. They overinsured the place, and then they stripped it of its security. It was already vulnerable, being on the edge of town, and there being an all-night shift.
Law enforcement.
Yeah, and a woman working there alone at night around 3 in the morning is murdered and robbed there. And they had done certain other things, too, like you described. Putting ads and stuff in the windows to make it so that if a cop just happened to be driving by, they wouldn't see if there was anything going on in there if it's 3 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So they maximized the danger there, and did similar things at accident at construction sites where you know they would cause an accident. All those links, not only to those two articles by Eric Mobius, but also to a link to an interview or an article that doesn't go into all the detail that I did, but an interview that the Austin American Statesman did with Eric Mobius. And that's
really
interesting. Yes, and you can read that there, as well as an article in the San Antonio Business Journal that gets into insurance reserve fraud and interviews Mobius and another lawyer who was investigating this at the same time, Nick Milam, and treats it quite seriously. And there's information in these articles about the documentation that shows some funny things going on with in the aftermath of the yogurt shop murders. Bryce Foods was the corporation that owned yogurt shop.
There was a lawsuit.
Yeah.
Some kind of settlement
and
involved
it's,
there.
It's very convoluted, and so but you can read about
it. That they didn't have enough security, wasn't it?
Well,
I think I would have sworn there was some case where the yogurt shop was, or somebody was found guilty of not having adequate video surveillance mm-hmm. or some kind of security at the yogurt shop,
mm-hmm.
which again would fit the bill from what we were describing.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Well, so that information is available there, and as I say, it's very detailed and convoluted. The entire case is. It was very difficult to try to give a concise picture of this matter, and it's interesting that this is something that really hasn't gotten the attention that it should, this alternate view of what may have happened there. Considering how much this has been in the news, it's still big news every time there's any kind of development here in Austin. But there's a lot more to the story. And anyway, again, I have to wonder, will more attention be paid to Mobius theories after these guys get exonerated, if they do, and we're crossing our fingers that they do.
Okay. Well, this is a subject that we could go into so in depth, but man, we got so much news to cover tonight, and I'm really excited about all the stories to cover tonight. We'll be right back on the other side for the second half of PSYOP Radio live via American Freedom Radio. Stay tuned. Thanks for joining us. This is the second hour of PSYOP Radio. Man, that went by really fast. All that information about the breaking news and the yogurt shop murder
yes.
case here in Austin, Texas.
Okay.
Oh, you can hear?
Now I can.
All right. we've got, again, so much news to cover tonight.
So much.
We've got lots of Obama news, some APAC news, crazy mad science news, man. There's some crazy mad. Crazy.
But let's talk about Michael Jackson.
Should we get that out of the way?
I just got one thing to say about it. It's funny how not only do celebrities die in clusters, but it's funny how many of them, there's some kind of Scientology connection that emerges when they die. Remember the story about David Carradine?
Yeah.
We didn't know he was a Scientologist. Well, he wasn't, supposedly. And yet there he was, photos that showed him at some big Scientologist event. Well, there's a Michael Jackson connection to Scientology. Here's an old news story that goes back several years. It says here, a lot of big-name stars are unwittingly about to start raising money for Scientology thanks to Michael Jackson. At 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time Monday, Jackson is launching a worldwide Internet download of his charity single, What More Can I Give? It goes on and it describes it, but basically it gets right down to the gist of the article. And the money's going to Scientology. And it mentions here that Jackson was briefly married to a Scientologist, Marie Presley.
Was it the real Lisa Marie?
In the late 1990s. And, which brings to mind another connection here. It's interesting how the last time a big king of rock or pop died, Elvis, there was, all of these major news coverage. And his home, Graceland, was turned into a tourist attraction, and they're talking about doing that with Neverland now. turning it into a tourist attraction.
They got to make up their money, man.
And burying Michael there on the grounds.
Oh, wow. So it'll be a pilgrimage.
So, you'll have a West Coast a version of Graceland. Okay.
Yeah, whatever you want to say about him, dude. That voice. So, headline, CNN, Jackson dies, almost takes internet with him. And this great photograph, this great comic picture of the Twitter fail, epic fail picture of, usually it's a white whale,
yeah,
right? Moby Dick.
Yeah.
No, it's Twitter.
It's the King of Pop.
The King of Pop,
down.
Michael Jackson, because they interpreted the massive searching going on with his death to an attack. They thought they were under some kind of denial of service attack.
Google thought they were under attack. Twitter went down. Civilization as we know it. Wikipedia saw a flurry of activity with close to 500 edits made to Jackson's entry in less than 24 hours. It goes on and on. The madness.
All right. Well,
the
we'll,
drama.
We'll be right back after this. Welcome back. We're back for another edition of PSYOP Radio, live from Austin, Texas. Man, I love our bumper music.
So Jackson died, and the
internet
is still standing.
Woo!
Okay. We made it through that one.
So this, I published a link under this, under the Mad Science section of our links tonight. Google thought Michael Jackson traffic was an attack. Jackson dies, almost takes internet with him. There's also crazy news, world's first controllable molecular gear at nanoscale created. This is at ScienceDaily.com. We're talking, nanotechnology stuff here. It's pretty amazing. The new world, the rise of the new culture of participation. This is kind of internet interactivity news. But, man, okay. So during the commercial, I was showing Mac this video capture of the day of the June 25th.
Yeah.
It's a visual representation of the Earth and the random event generator number generators that they have around the planet doing parapsychological experiments to seemingly track when these random event generators that are random off of atomic decay go off random, seemingly whenever a mass consciousness event occurs. Whenever masses of humanity pay attention to something specific, these random event generators seem to be affected and go off random and become like novelty. If I'm getting this right, ingresses and becomes. It's a Terrence McKenna thing, so it's pretty weird and hard to understand. But suffice to say, in watching this thing that I was brought. It was brought to my attention from somebody over at the Rigorous Intuition Forums, of course, and it's a recording of the Princeton Random Event Egg Global Consciousness Project that I've talked about so much on this show. It's a map of the Earth showing these random event generators, and they're going off access pretty much throughout the day, but I think towards Later in the day, there's an unexpected yellow event on a part of Europe in the map that is unexpected because all the other events have been red indications.
Mm-hmm.
And then the deviation from randomness seems to go off scale and pretty much stay there for several hours until it settles back down. Now, what the heck any of this means, I have no idea. I'm going to have to go read through the Princeton Noosphere Global Consciousness Project website to try and figure out what that might mean. But it seems like all the other evidence, like when the trial announced the thing with O.J. Simpson, when Princess Diana died, when 9/11 happened, these random event generators became less random, mm-hmm. as if people's consciousness, as they became aware of this thing and focused on a single thing, randomness in the universe started.
It would seem to be scientific proof of mass consciousness.
It would that
consciousness is not just locked inside our individual skulls and bodies, you know, but that we share some, what Jung called the collective unconscious. And
that we can perturb those processes in the universe, whether they be the electrons in a computer or the different particles in the fabric of reality. It seems that consciousness,
millions of minds working together, can have a massive effect.
Like I talked about on
the
other show,
physical world.
Those experiments where people have done mass meditations on reducing crime in one of America's most crime-riddled cities, Washington, D.C., and in fact, there was a staggering decrease in crime.
Prayer has been shown to have
over and
actual
over.
Positive effects.
Wow, science is pretty amazing, my God.
This is an amazing thing. I'd like to read more about that Princeton project.
We should get somebody on to talk about that, perhaps even Dean Radin. Dean Radin is a leading, what I would call a parapsychologist, even though he's just an anomalous information researcher. He's done some great stuff. So, okay, when I was at the site here locally looking at the news articles we were just covering about the yogurt shop murders, I saw this video of goings-on in Austin, and I see it does look like slanted alien eyes in the background there.
They do.
Don't they?
Absolutely.
They're blue and they're...
Dell rolling out a hardcore gaming machine to target a specific audience. KXAN's Matt Fleener shows us how Dell wants it to help turn a profit for the company.
We're here at Dell's Round Rock headquarters where they're showing off this new Alienware laptop to
Alienware.
All of their employees. Really a big time laptop for this company. They're really targeting gamers all over the world, hoping this laptop can help improve its bottom line.
In one of its most powerful and mysterious launches in a long time, Dell Computers and its Alienware brand have their sights on the zombie zappers and bad guy bombers in a real-life fight for dollars.
And what we're doing is getting more focused on what different segments of customers really want and providing that to them.
Dell has focused
Look,
on a high-end computer market.
Yeah. Tinfoil hat!
This time looking to appeal to hardcore gamers
okay.
like Martin Bogomolnik.
This new All right, so... This is a local news story about the launch of Alienware's latest gaming computer. Now, Alienware, for those who just can't guess from the name, is a brand of hardware that's capitalizing on the popularity of the alien meme and the mm-hmm. gray alien logo in the head image, the big round head with the big slanted almond-shaped eyes.
Yeah.
And this is a look, more... There's lots of people wearing tinfoil hats, and the guy mentioned at the beginning this unique marketing campaign. They don't say it anywhere in here, but I'm going, okay, what folks have suspected all along, Alienware was involved in various viral marketing campaigns like mm-hmm. those weird drone photographs and circulating in the UFO community. And what do they do at this launch event? They have, I'm guessing that they probably passed out, or maybe he did what the folks at the retro UFO conference Adam Gorelli went to and spoke at, and they had a contest for people who could make the best tinfoil hat. But my point is, here you go. I bet you this is somebody's idea of funny marketing to have folks in tinfoil hats at the Alienware launch party.
Yeah.
And it was just a couple of years ago that I believe unless I'm mistaken, somebody can send me an email at miles@psyopradio.com or mac@psyopradio.com. I believe that Dell bought Alienware after they, you know, were already having pretty good success selling cheaper, powerful gaming computers. But there they go, marketing to the alien UFO community.
Alien UFO community.
Such as it is. It's like the Patriot Liberty community, such as it is. I mean, you know, we're the freedom-loving community. There's a lot of different freak flags flying amongst...
humanity, such as it is.
Such as it is.
Yeah.
Doctors baffled, intrigued by girl who doesn't age. This one's been making the rounds. This one's over at abcnews.go.com. She's like, what, 16 years old and yet looks and is still like a baby? Like, this is whack. This is crazy. And, of course, scientists are thinking, oh, if only we can harness this, we'll live forever.
Yeah, be 90 and look 20.
Absolutely. Brooke Greenberg is the size of an infant with the mental capacity of a toddler. She turned 16 in January. Why doesn't she age? Howard Greenberg, 52, asked of his daughter. Is she the fountain of youth? Oh, I didn't know there was a video with this. Crikey, I didn't download it ahead of time. Such questions are why scientists are fascinated by Brooke. No kidding. Among the many documented instances of children who fail to grow or develop in some way, case may be unique, according to her doctor. Yeah.
If that is a 16-year-old girl,
maybe the one holding her.
Yeah. The one holding her.
The one holding the baby, maybe.
But that looks like a baby. She's a permanent baby. That's weird.
That's wild.
I've never heard of this ever happening before in history. Is this unprecedented, or are there cases
an
I don't know about?
Surely
we would have heard of something like this happening
you'd
before.
You'd think. But then it would probably just be myth until the proper scientific
And why
has
it suddenly happened?
It.
Is it something in the water? Something in the milk?
Oh, yeah. We have some aquapocalypto.
Speaking of news.
This was a weird string of news articles I saw coming out of the UK. Anti-fluoride group's MP kill threat from The Age. Extremists threatened Victorian minister to blow up regional water authority over fluoride plan. This is perfect. They're demonizing in Britain the anti-fluoride people as being violent terrorists.
Yes.
Anti-fluoride extremists have threatened to kill a Victorian government minister and blow up a regional water authority.
Yeah.
Respect my authority. Fluoride extremists want minister dead. This is from the Courier Mail. Anti-fluoride extremists have threatened to kill. Yeah, same. It's the same story all coming out of the British papers.
Just the use of those words, seeing them. Anti-fluoride extremist. Wow, what a term.
Yeah, our good local Austin anti-fluoride activist. They better look out. You're
extremist.
Now you're going to be labeled as an extremist, just like those ones over across the pond. My God, man. And just when you thought it was safe, Harrisburg chapter of NAACP urges martial law.
Why?
Oh, well, crime, of course. It's getting out of hand. We need somebody to crack down on these unruly people in our neighborhoods. This is from PennLive.com, PennLive.com, Harrisburg chapter of NAACP urges martial law. I can't believe this.
Well, what's going on there in Harrisburg? Just terrible crimes off the scale? War zone?
Where was it? Was it in Arkansas where they had the same thing? Drug gangs out of control in this tiny, you know, town. And so what do they do?
Maybe it could get bad enough that something like that might be necessary. I just don't know.
And you sent me a link.
I would move.
But then that's succumbing to terrorism.
Yes, that's
It's a police state here, honey. We got to get out of here. The neighborhood.
Yes.
No, that's just getting up in the face of evil and terror. Well, kids. It's for the kids.
Yeah.
You sent me this link. Homeland Security drone patrolling NNY.
Yeah. You know how several months ago we had a show all about this sighting of what appeared to be a predator drone in far north Austin in the Wells Branch neighborhood by an individual of my close acquaintance. And in the middle of the night, this thing just circling over the neighborhood. Well, this does happen. And here's a case in New York State where a predator drone, and this is reported in the paper here, it's not a secret.
Newswatch50.com.
But Homeland Security is patrolling the border there with Ontario.
And there's surveillance camera footage of them going after some kind of boat.
They say it's a test. And
presumably
we're going to see more of this, and finally it'll be fully operational.
And then
drones.
Eventually they'll put, you know, hellfire missiles on them that can triangulate on your cell phone and take you out when the purge happens.
Yeah. And
my
yeah.
God, I'm just crazy.
Well, you know, with the immense power that they would certainly have to do that, then you got to wonder, would they possibly use it? And given, you know, the historical fact that, you know, more people have been killed by their governments than by anything else, and our government doesn't have a very good track record.
No, murdering,
killing people.
Churchgoers and their children, in the state of Texas.
Yeah. There was a precedent for that, the genocide perpetrated against the American Indian. This goes back to the very beginning of the government, which is why the Native American activist Russell Means called Waco the white man's wounded knee.
Oof.
So
that page finally loaded. Harrisburg chapter of NAACP urges martial law, by Stephen Farley of the Patriot News over at PennLive.com. The Harrisburg chapter is calling on Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell to suspend some civil liberties and impose martial law in the city to halt the wave of recent lawlessness. Chapter President Stanley Lawson also called on Rendell to bring in the state National Guard for at least 30 days and to impose a curfew. In June, there have been at least 12 shootings, many of them in the daytime, including a man killed Wednesday at a busy city intersection during the lunch hour. Quote, "The Guard is for floods and natural disasters. I don't know any more of a natural disaster than our young people being killed," he said at a general membership meeting of about 25 people at Capital Presbyterian Church, 14th and Cumberland Streets. "It's time for some real action," he said. "Right now, the important thing is to stop this madness. We're beyond what the Harrisburg Police Department can do. We need help," Lawson said.
Well, what this shows you is how quickly you can get the people behind something like martial law. Scare them enough with lawlessness or some terrible event, and they'll be begging for it.
Okay, and now we've got this other news. Think about this. NAACP calling for martial law. Where's this other one? It's what some would call a terroristic threat. And what is it? It's the Klan. Did you see this thing about the KKK? I can't find the link to it, but it's on our page. And it's basically the Klan has leafleted this area of predominantly African Americans, and I believe it's the local ACLU are saying they're not going to stand up for the First Amendment rights of the Klan in this case. It's the notices dropped on the lawns of these folks is, you know, a pro white, pro Klan, anti interracial marriage and kind of thing, and it's. I've got a video. That's right. I've got a silly video.
Oh, good.
That's what this is.
All right.
And I got to say, you know, I was having a conversation with my mom about, you know, the shooting of the abortion guy. Isn't that terrorism? You know, aren't the groups that are spreading the names of these doctors, aren't they, you know, creating terror because they're terrorizing the pro-choice people who, you know, are supporting a woman's right to choose, and yet you end up with this state of affairs where nonprofits who think they're doing the right thing are funding people who end up taking extreme action, or at least maybe they're not funding them. They flare them up. They get them
that
all
could happen
excited.
In any activist community.
Here we go.
Members, they have always been ignorant, uneducated, scared, and hiding in the shadows. Thank God you don't see thousands of these bozos marching through the streets anymore, but unfortunately, a small group of these clowns still see the world through the small holes of a white hood. I want you to watch this story by our That's WJHL funny. Affiliate reporter, Nate Morabito, out of Greenville, Tennessee. The absurdity of the Klan is a given, but watch and see if you can spot the absurdity behind the law.
10 steps to a better America.
His hand shaking, Edward Reed recites the KKK's message. It doesn't take long for the words to strike a chord.
Certain things on here that really upset me. The first thing was interracial marriages. And I've been married to a Caucasian woman for 13 years.
You'll find similar frustrations among others in this neighborhood.
We're not living in the 60s anymore.
Especially when they read the last line. It calls for securing the KKK's existence for white Christian children.
They perpetrate hate, and it's very obvious they don't understand God.
But I'm just upset about it, ticked off about it. And he won't stand still for it.
All right, we'll be back with more on this controversial situation after these messages. Thanks for staying tuned. What's going to happen when they leave their home or when they come in?
We're back.
All right, we're in the last half hour here. Wait, there's a phone number. if you want to give us a call, I'm not even looking at the board. Never mind that. We're going to have some guests and take more calls in the future. But we were listening to this case and is this terrorism? That's what I'm asking.
Littering, for one thing, is against the law.
But yeah,
sending poison pen messages to people is, I think, how you would define this, and that's a form of terrorism, wouldn't it be?
I don't advocate laws against quote unquote hate speech or quote unquote terrorism, really, because to me it's just way too slippery a slope. It's not even a slope; it's a freaking sheer vertical drop into tyranny. But here's a case where these folks, a predominantly African-American community, and you're hearing them.
Not living in the 60s anymore.
Especially when they read the last line. It calls for securing the KKK's existence for white Christian children.
They perpetrate hate, and it's very obvious they don't understand God.
But I'm just upset about it, ticked off about it. And he won't stand still for it.
And neither will the Johnson City NAACP.
Why are you hating someone you don't even know? And you're upsetting people, and they may not know what's going to happen when they leave their home or when they're coming in at night.
The group is standing behind these neighbors, arguing the KKK, which listed state headquarters as a P.O. box in Kingsport, broke the law.
But Greenville police say the people responsible for this letter may not be guilty of any crime.
The only actual crime that occurred in this situation would be possibly littering.
Although investigators alerted the FBI about these flyers, they say it'd be difficult to prosecute the KKK. After all, its members were just practicing free speech.
People might not agree with what they're saying, but there was no threats of violence.
Still,
it's a crime to me.
That's a hard sell for this crowd.
We have to stand up and fight this hate.
Especially when the memories of burning crosses are seared in their minds.
Littering. Are you kidding me? Here we are in 2009. We have a black president. We have gay leaders. We have successful interracial marriages. We've come a long way, folks, but still, in this country, you can spew hate, make innocent black residents fearful to come out their doors, and all these punks get busted for is littering. It's the 100th anniversary of the NAACP,
all right.
And if you are on the side that believes...
The intent, clearly, is to intimidate these people and to create a climate of fear. And to perhaps make them move away.
If the Klan had made the mistake of putting those notices in the mailboxes, it would have been a federal offense.
Well, there you go. You know, they've learned their way around that one. On the other hand, it certainly would appear to fall into the category of the strategy of tension, possibly. You know, someone could just do that in order to...
get everybody on edge and
get people
and
on
desire
edge.
Police state.
Yeah. And so and to maybe pass laws against not only placing such material in the mailbox, but littering.
Putting it, wrapping it around a rock and throwing it through someone's window?
Yeah.
Or on, at least onto their lawn?
If you should litter something offensive, you know, if something is offensive or promotes hate speech on the item that you litter with. Am I saying that right?
I guess that sounds about right.
You know, so our littering laws are about to become more complicated.
All right. We might take phone calls. The number is 879-3805. That's area code 512-879-3805. And I'll try to keep that menu up in the background so I can see if we've got a caller. But there's, again, so much news to cover as usual. I'm at a loss. There was so much I wanted to cover. This is really important. So I'm going to go to this for a second here because this is a couple of news stories in one. And it's from a liberal left gatekeeper, so-called by so many in the 9/11 truth community.
Iran. Juan?
Well, the Wall Street Journal reported Monday that European telecommunications companies have helped the Iranian government develop one of the world's most sophisticated mechanisms to monitor and control communications on the Internet. This capability was provided in part by a joint venture of the German-based Siemens AG and Nokia, the Finnish cell phone company. The Iranian government appears to be engaging in a practice often called deep packet inspection, which enables authorities to block communication, gather information about individuals, as well as alter it for disinformation purposes. The Wall Street Journal also reports that China's internet censoring mechanism is believed to use deep packet inspection as well.
Well, the media reform group Free Press says the same technology is also being widely deployed here in the United States. To find out more about deep packet inspection and concerns about how this kind of technology can be used, we're joined via Democracy Now! Video stream by Josh Silver, the executive director of Free Press, freepress.net. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Josh. Explain what they're doing in Iran and then how the same technology is being used here.
Well, yesterday the Wall Street Journal reported that the Iranian government had secured this system from a German and Finnish company that will look through everything, both landline telephones, mobile telephones, email, websites, looking for keywords and actually monitoring the entire traffic going through one choke point in Iran. It's been disputed by the European company, but the validity of the report seems solid. What's scary about this is that this technology that monitors everything that goes through the Internet is something that works, it's readily available, and there's no legislation in the United States that prevents the U.S. government from employing it, and that's what's really the cautionary tale here.
Okay, so this video goes on for quite some time, and folks, the way you're probably listening to us now, the way we're streaming to you now, all of these channels serve the beast. I hate to say, you know, and we all justify it as a matter of, oh, well, we're using the beast, we're using the system to beat the system.
But we're all part of the beast system, ultimately, is what you're saying.
A lot of religious perspectives, including the Gnostic perspective, look at this reality as Luciferian by nature, that its base, it's certainly made up of light, and Lucifer is the idea of light and the light bearer, and energy is just light, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think, for me, that doesn't mean that it's game over, man, game over. No, it doesn't mean that. It means, you know, okay, just realize, you know, our perspective on privacy and self and happiness pursuit and the pursuit of liberty and is increasingly viewed as against the systems that we use every day, and and inevitably we're going to bump heads with
yes,
this,
I can see that
this,
happening.
The B thing,
yes.
man, this news is just crazy. They're talking about, you know, the kind of NSA snooping on keywords that we've talked about for so long. Check out this other, you know, Iran, gosh, you know, North Korea, oh my gosh, Honduras.
Yeah, all that stuff that...
Soldiers arrest Honduran president, seize palace, claiming a coup.
Yeah.
And
there's a lot going on in the world.
Jeremy
and,
Scahill, the writer who's done so much good reporting on Blackwater and who has a blog over at Rebel Reports, he's Twittered, quote, "The leader of the military coup in Honduras today is a graduate of the School of the Americas." Surprise!
Yeah.
So many activists here have
and that is not
protested
a good thing.
The School of the Americas, where they train folks in military tactics and psychological warfare tactics that are the ones that are used all around the world to foment revolution, which, you know, hey, you know, there's places where we would like to see some revolution of thought and human governance, but...
But generally what they're doing is not for the people's good.
And it always ends up using the wrong, you know, really evil machinations, usually force and terror, you know, through
shock and
strategy
awe.
Of tension, shock and awe type of covert ops.
So. And they do it here, domestically. Psychological operations, terror. What they do in these other countries, they do here.
What about, we've even got this Bernanke guy who's, you know, flinching and flexing his muscles over being questioned about this whole thing, and Ron Paul's Federal Reserve audit investigation.
Yeah.
That's... Congress Daily says this morning that Fed officials purposely declined to consult with other federal financial regulators, and one email expressed concern that an SEC employee, quote, knows something is up. The Wall Street Journal reported that you and Mr. Paulson attended two weekly meetings of the Financial Stability Oversight Board.
How did
and,
he respond?
And refused or declined to disclose the seriousness of the problems that were being faced by the Bank of America and Merrill Lynch at that time. What would you say to the majority of this Congress who has now co-sponsored the bill to require audits of the Federal Reserve? Do you feel that the Federal Reserve is operating with too much secrecy and too much refusal to disclose information that you have to other federal banking regulators?
The Federal Reserve has made enormous strides in the last year under my chairmanship to expand the information that we release. We release monthly information on all the various programs that we have. We've developed a website and a monthly report that involves all kinds of information. We think we are quite transparent. We are happy to work with Congress if they have further concerns about any of our programs. We are more than happy to work with you to make sure that you're comfortable that they are well managed and are serving a public purpose.
Do you think it would cause problems for the Fed or for the economy if that legislation was to pass?
My concern about the legislation is that if the GAO is auditing not only the operational aspects of our programs and the details of the programs, but is making judgments about our policy decisions, that would effectively be a takeover of monetary policy by the Congress, a repudiation of the independence of the Federal Reserve, which would be highly destructive to the stability of the financial system, the dollar, and our national economic situation.
Thank you.
Yeah, in other words, back off, buddy. Don't you dare try to execute your constitutionally mandated congressional oversight.
Yeah, and remember what happened when JFK decided he would do something about the Federal Reserve.
My goodness.
Well, things could get interesting.
They're getting more interesting every day, Mac. It's the weirdness index is off the chart. They were gonna the news out of Thursday and Friday was some Nigerian church was gonna unveil the Ark of the Covenant, for God's sake.
Wow.
I mean, I haven't had the chance to even look into that, but my God.
The
wacky,
second coming is just
stuff.
Right around the corner.
But when it happens, it's really real,
you know, that it's really God or Buddha or Elvis there in the sky or Diana or Michael Jackson now, can we believe it? It could be Operation Blue Beam.
Okay.
Holograms designed to, you know, take us over.
That we are just running the... Bernanke video clip about the Federal Reserve investigation audit that Ron Paul and most of the Congress want.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? Well, something's got to be done.
Oh, yeah, there's this other one. Argentina case threatens to criminalize criticism of Israel. That's pretty interesting, over at electronicintifada.net. And where's that thing? Hugh Harkin at Electronic Intifada, June 24, 2009, in what Nobel Prize laureate Adolf Perez Esquivel has termed a witch hunt and an attack on democratic freedoms. Nine pro-Palestinian protesters in Argentina have been detained following a demonstration at an event celebrating Israel's 61st anniversary. The activists have been vilified as violent anti-Semites by politicians in the television and print media and now face up to 12 years in prison for, quote, ideological arrogance.
Ideological arrogance.
Under revived Juan Perón-era anti-terrorism legislation of dubious constitutionality. Yes, ideological arrogance.
Let me write that one down right now. I, of course, am not afflicted with that, but I know a few people who are.
Let's see. There's a great link to Bilderberg 2009 report from American Free Press that we've got a link to. Globalism and Bilderberg is the headline over at psyopradio.com. We'll be back for the final segment here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com after these messages. Do that to you, I swear.
Oh, yes, he would.
He would not tap my phone call.
He will tap your mind. He knows your inner thoughts.
He knows if you're naughty.
He knows when you've been nice.
He knows if you're Illuminati. some important news articles before we get into the whacked out, even weirder stuff than we've already been covering.
Could it possibly get weirder?
Department of Justice, in talking about the Israeli AIPAC case, witness was asked to fake suicide.
A witness was asked to fake suicide.
In the AIPAC Israeli treason case, two people asked a Pentagon official cooperating with prosecutors in an investigation into the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee to fake his own death to avoid testifying against two pro-Israel lobbyists charged in the case, according to the Justice Department.
Hmm.
Pentagon analyst Lawrence Franklin pled guilty in October 2005 to participating in a conspiracy with AIPAC officials Stephen Rosen and Keith Weissman to obtain and distribute classified information. The Justice Department dropped the case against Rosen and Weissman last month as a trial approached. This is wacky. Okay, you know, we're always hearing about people, the idea of people faking their deaths. In this case, the defense used this report by the accused of being approached to fake their deaths as a reason for lowering their sentence. Because, well, hey, they were complying with the court and the government and saying, hey, by the way, somebody's tampering with us as witness trying to get us to fake our own deaths.
Oh,
so, God. Hey, apparently that's a good, sad to say, but
yeah.
Apparently if you're
yeah.
accused, you might want to claim that you're being told to fake your own death. But what's weird is the FBI, I believe, says that they had records of the phone calls, but they weren't able, they didn't lead to any verifiable evidence to convict in the case of who was telling them to fake their own deaths. And of course this that was from Politico, and this other one is also from politico.com. Leniency for AIPAC leaker. Federal judges virtually wiped out the prison sentence of more than 12 years he first imposed on a Pentagon analyst who pled guilty to leaking classified information to two pro-Israel lobbyists. You figure it out, folks. And this wacky, crazy, freaking beast system news out of the Los Angeles Times from a couple of weeks ago, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, keeps a close eye on itself. And here we have a picture of Is that person in a wheelchair, or they just have a lot of camera control devices around them?
Got a lot of remote controls.
A vast and growing web of security cameras monitors the city of 55,000 operated by a private group of self-appointed gatekeepers. There's been surprisingly little outcry. This historic town where America's founding fathers plotted during the Revolution and Milton Hershey later crafted his first chocolates now boasts another distinction. It may become the nation's most closely watched small city. Some 165 closed-circuit TV cameras soon will provide live, round-the-clock scrutiny of nearly every street, park, and other public space used by the 55,000 residents and the town's many tourists. That's more outdoor cameras than are used by many major cities, including San Francisco and Boston.
Wow. I wonder how close it comes to London, which supposedly is the most surveilled city on
and
the planet.
And soon to be that province in China. Unlike anywhere else, the cash-strapped Lancaster outsourced its surveillance to a private nonprofit group that hires civilians to tilt pan and zoom the cameras and to call police if they spot suspicious activity. No government agency is directly involved. Now, I remember Alex Jones reporting on something like this years ago, and it was in, again, mainstream news sources, where
I
they were
see.
Talking about oh. piping the stuff around the country and having people on their computers watching surveillance cameras in cities they don't live in and watching for crime
and maybe
and
picking
other
up a little bit of extra cash, you know, and you got a lot of people out of work.
But the weirdest thing was they were talking about injecting fake crimes, fake terrorism to keep people on their toes watching the video. That was the weird thing from years back. I remember
that could
mentioning.
Get spooky.
So, okay, here, comics artist Mark Sable detained for unthinkable acts.
Yeah, I don't know how to credit this because I don't know this cartoonist, this colleague, Mark Sable, who has a comic book series called Unthinkable, which deals with some interesting...
Very interesting.
I mean, the comic series follows members of a government think tank that was tasked with coming up with 9/11 type unthinkable terrorist scenarios that are now coming true. Anyway, there's a press release that went out from his publisher saying that this artist, Mark Sable, was detained by TSA security guards at Los Angeles International Airport, and in going through his luggage, they got a hold of his script and interrogated
him. 9/11 and terrorism.
9/11 and so forth, and it says here, the minute I saw the faces of the agents, that's when they saw his script, I knew I was in trouble. The first page of the unthinkable script mentioned 9/11, terror plots, and the fact that the fictional world had become a police state. The TSA agents then proceeded to interrogate me, having a hard time understanding that a comic book could be about anything other than superheroes, let alone that anyone actually wrote scripts for comics. And he goes on, and finally he says, in the end, I feel my privacy is a small price to pay for educating the government about the medium. Well,
that's
when I read this,
weird statement.
Yeah.
I
think
that?
He meant that ironically, surely.
So.
But I don't know him. And the first thing I thought was, well, this is great publicity. I mean, you can't buy publicity like this, you know. I don't want to say I'm skeptical necessarily. I mean, you know, but his publisher put that out there, and that's just... for what it's worth, but I would like to know why, when I went through customs, I wasn't done the same honor. After all, I was carrying with me a copy of the Bush Junta for that very purpose. I was hoping someone would, you know,
Fantagraphics
look
would
at
be
that.
Reveling in the
yeah,
publicity.
I needed the publicity. I didn't get it, and I'm just wondering, you know, why? You know, that's my question about that story.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so we've got this other news article, 35,000-year-old flute, oldest so far found over in Germany, a prehistoric flute.
And wallabies getting high.
Wallabies getting high and making crop circles. Falls a
Whoa.
Fish from the sky. And what the heck is this about? Britney Spears going to be in a time travel Holocaust movie?
Oh, my gosh. We have no time to get into these things.
It's too freaky.
We'll save them for next show.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us. This is PSYOP Radio signing off. Thank
Good
you.
Good night. Come on.